You're listening to Mystic Magic, exploring our spirit to understand our lives. I'm Celeste A. Frazier, your hostess. I'm an ordained New Thought minister who embraces all faiths. I've pastored a few spiritual communities, written a few books, performed in various media. I write, produce, and perform. I am a visioning facilitator, a diversity, equity, and inclusion facilitator. And with Mystic Magic, we explore amazing guests to find out what the divine reveals through us and how we may benefit from this magnificence. Stay tuned. This is Mystic Magic, exploring our spirit to understand our lives. Hey, hey, Mystic Magic Podcast fans. We are in for a sweet show today because today my guest is Charles Geddes. And Charles is a founding member and the current president on the board of directors for the Big Sky Retreat. His steady guidance and profound love for this annual event are evident through his years of dedication to those who volunteer and attend. In his 50 plus years of ministry, he served what are now Centers for Spiritual Living in CSL in Tucson, Arizona, in Southern California, and in Florida. He received an honorary doctorate for his contributions to New Thought through CSL and the affiliated New Thought Network, ANTN, also known as ANTN. Charles moved to Clancy, Montana, and launched a new nonprofit to honor his latest calling, Mind Your Own Becoming, also affectionately known as MYOB. The primary theme for MYOB is standing for all lives that have not mattered and addressing key social issues. The goal is planting seeds for future generations to awaken to a world that honors equality, love, and regard for all without exception. Welcome, Charles, to Mystic Magic.
Thank you. It is my joy to be here with you.
Great, great, great. So I enjoy having people that I've known for a while come on the show because it gives me an opportunity to learn more about them. Because everybody has a busy life and we don't get to dig in the way we could, right? So 50 plus right. years of ministry, why did you start and how did you start?
The why, to do what I felt was a genuine call. And I have shared, and very honestly, that I went into ministry for all the wrong reasons, from the standpoint of wanting to prove myself and be able to bring about a sense of worthiness within myself that I didn't feel. And I felt that if I did enough good and wonderful things for others, that I could overcome that inherent feeling within myself that was rooted in my journey of sexual identity and feeling that I was basically an abhorrent person as a gay man. And I don't define myself as a gay man anymore. I define myself in the reality of the acceptance of my soul that is the sum total of male and female, and I'm at deeper peace with my soul than I've ever been. But I finally realized that I was brought in no matter what the reasons, because it was my destiny in this lifetime to be in some form of ministry.
Okay, how did you know that it was your destiny?
By the feeling that I get and have when I'm in relationship, in purposefulness, and sharing universal principles, not based upon a boxed view of religion, but universal principles that speak to the oneness from which we all have come. You know, there's only one know-it-all. It's not me, but it is a presence that created everything that we behold in the galaxies. And I'm gifted. We are gifted to be some part of that. So when I tap into that, I just feel so aligned. And when I'm working in counsel with individuals, and the inquiry is really about not telling them what to think or feel, but rather have them explore what it is to do that for themselves. And the joy of that is the heart of ministry.
Yes. Coming into ministry, did you come directly into New Thought?
It's a yes and no, because I had studied Eastern teachings in high school and in my early 20s, and was led into the study of Edgar Cayce and his autobiography, There Is a River, by Thomas Sugra. And I read what Cayce channeled through absorbing that. It was like, oh my God, I know this is remembrance for me. This isn't new. This is remembrance. And then I was led to the Science of Mind, religious science study, in a rather odd way, because I had to work a couple of jobs. In my early 20s, I was helping raise my four nieces. My sister had divorced, and I was helping in that journey. And I got an extra job as a bartender. And the bartender that was training me introduced me to the teaching, to Science of Mind. And I hadn't gone to church in a long time, because I could never understand why I would go in and come out feeling worse. So I just decided I'm not going. And so I had resistance. But when I went and heard what was being said, I knew I had found a spiritual home.
So when you went into church, were you finding that people were saying things to the contrary of what you believed? Did you find that you were, being disrespected in some way? Can you tell us more about that?
The answer is yes, in regards to not feeling that I could be genuinely, authentically myself, and that not believing in duality in the manner and way in which I was hearing it, and that I could not consider that I would be damned to hell, even though I felt again that struggle within myself. But I did not believe for one moment that there was an eternal damnation that existed. I think we are accountable for actions, words, deeds, actions, behavior, how we treat one another, absolutely. But I don't wish eternal damnation on any soul, and I could never accept that as truth.
So that's the first time I've heard anyone ever tell me that they came into ministry through being at a bar. So once you got to the CSL that you went to, did you start taking classes? What happened?
It was a journey of miracles, because I definitely could not afford classes. But I began to just absorb and be an integral part of the center and of the church in Glendale, California. Dr. Laura Holman, who was the first female president of the organization of churches called back then the International Association of Religious Science Churches. So, and I was enthralled by her. And there was an anonymous donor in the congregation that decided to pay for my first 2 years of study. And I will never forget that, because I knew then, this is my heart, this is what I'm supposed to do. And from that point, I went through, and I hadn't even finished my ministerial class when I was called to Tucson, Arizona, to have that be my first church. And they waited for 6 months for me to graduate to take that church and be the spiritual leader. Amazing.
Well, it was yours by divine right, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, did you like Tucson? What made you leave Tucson to go to Southern California?
Because I was complete. I had been there 11 years. And I have always, in my life, when something I feel intuitively and clearly within my soul is complete and that there's something new to go to, I will let go of everything as it was to step into that new realm. And that's a scary thing. It truly can be. But I've lived from a point of trust. And I wound up when I moved to California, or back to California, I was on staff with dear Dr. Elizabeth Marshall in Inglewood, but I wound up working in the legal field, and I became an executive legal secretary. Well, that was all a part of my grounding to get a better grip on staying here on the planetary system called Earth, as opposed to in the higher realms, which is a beautiful thing, but I needed grounding. And that's what Spirit gave me, working in the law. That was harsh grounding. But I learned so much from that. And then took over another center full-time in Montebello. And when that was done, after, again, about 11 years of service, I decided, you know, I'm letting this go. And I moved to Florida. And I was in Florida for 14 years. And then I knew it was finished. And here I am in Clancy, Montana.
Well, let's go back for a minute. Your ministry in Florida, was at the Bridges of Wellness?
Well, I started with Dr. Arlene Bump with the Center for Spiritual Living in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, as co-pastor. And I was there for 2 years. And it became really clear in that two-year time frame, and in all honesty, that they really could not afford two pastors. So I decided to recreate my journey again and created at that moment what was called Bridges of Wellness. And it was a whole different arena because we had for about a year and a half, 2 years, a program for aftercare recovery and addiction. And I was executive director of that. But after a couple years, it was really clear that we could not survive in the context that we just didn't get the funding to continue what we were doing. And I realized it really wasn't for me to be an executive director of such a program. So that's where I let go and said, what now? And I wasn't, you know, I've never believed in giving up, but it's one of my principles I teach. Never give up, but be willing to step back and reassess where your heart is, where you really want to go. And then I created Bridges Spiritual Centers, and that was in existence for about 10, 11 years. But then it happened up at Big Sky Retreat in 2019, prior to 2020, and I knew that I wanted to finish the last chapters of my life in the mountains, where my soul, because I was born in Colorado, and where my soul was so fed. And so I just decided, I'm doing this. And I had no backing to do that. I didn't have financial securities in the sense of what most people would define as that, to do it. But my angel said, Charles, it's not about the how. It's about, yes, you can, and we will lead you. And so I did. I let go of everything to come here and start anew. And then 2020 happened. And it took 3 years for me to finally get here. But it revealed what I was to be doing with Mind Your Own Becoming and Black Lives Matter, COVID, and the insanity and divisiveness and rage and hatred that was coming after generations, after hundreds of years, finally coming to be seen in a way that we could not ignore it anymore.
Wonderful. We're definitely going to get into that conversation, but I kind of want to skip around a little bit in the past, because my experience of you, I believe, came when I came back to Illinois and was doing my ministry there. And you were coming in and doing work with people in the Chicago suburbs. And I was exposed to your consciousness and blessed by it. And I thank you for that. And also, I remember in the course of my ministry in my second ministry that you came from Florida because no one else thought it was a priority to come install me into DuPage. But you came and installed me, and we got to know each other, and I got to feel your vibrations up close. And so I'm grateful for that as well. What other works have you been doing? Clearly, you've been doing workshop facilitation. You've been perhaps doing some mentoring. Tell us about how you've been supporting other ministries as well as your own.
Well, I've supported other, quote, ministries far more in the past than I do now in regards to the fact that Mind Your Own Becoming is not a church or a center. So the support of other ministries really was more in the past so far as centers and churches. And when I was on the board of directors for Religious Science International before they merged to become Centers for Spiritual Living collectively, the United and International. But I was on the board, and for several years, I was integral in creating two great programs that are still now a part of CSL. One is called the Phoenix Bridge, which is for ministers in transition, that particularly licensed ministers that have not been ordained, but they are in inquiry or shifts and challenges and personal factors that are changing where they are, and working with them to help them see a new way or a new path, and if ministry was for them. So I spent many years doing that. And then definitely one-on-one mentoring with several ministers that I was the sponsor for through all those years. So I did a lot then. Now it's a whole different reality. I do some mentoring, but it's very selective. And my whole journey is putting my energies into this new paradigm called Mind Your Own Becoming.
Right. Now, you have been on the board of Big Sky Retreat since what year?
Since the early 70s. We are in our 47th year. And I was a part, and what a gift, of the founding board. And I have been on that board from conception. So I might have a Guinness World Record here, spending time on a board.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought of you in conjunction with Big Sky Retreat, right? And so... Yeah. You know, I knew about it, but until, you know, you and I were having lunch, I hadn't really considered going there. I mean, I didn't have any pull to want to be going to Montana. It wasn't one of those things on my bucket list. But I showed up, and it was a wonderful experience. What is the intention behind the Big Sky Retreat?
I will move into the fact of its origin, which was a body and group of wonderful New Thought ministers that really wanted something completely independent and never done before in regards to offering a retreat that wasn't under any umbrella of any other organization. It was simply a yearly retreat to bring people from many different pathways. At that moment in time, primarily New Thought. We've expanded that to much more now. But to give them an experience of, first of all, to be there not in a role, but in an experience, an opportunity. And one of the key things we did at the beginning was that we never had titles. We didn't put Reverend or Doctor in front of your names. It was just, you know, where you were from, and that you could be there for that whole nearly week experience with just a sense of, wow, you know, this is really for me. I can just not be in a role. And what an experience that is to go and you're not on. It's just, let's experience who we are together. And in the settings, it started in the Grand Tetons, and we were there 20 years. And then we moved to Big Sky, and we've been there now the 27 years. But the whole journey, and currently, I think that it has a profound purposefulness for those serving and in ministry, in coaching, in many different arenas of the need that we have to realize we must come together, in a sense, recognizing our oneness, but realizing that we must have the dialogue, and particularly in arenas that we more than ever need to be conscious of, about entitlement, white supremacy, and open to a broader scope of value. You know, one of the things I emphasize a lot, that everything we do on MYLB is about that equality, equity, without exception, so that everyone, we're on a playing field, that equal opportunity is there. What we do with equal opportunity is really up to us individually, but that we have the purposefulness of opportunity to come together. And that matters more than ever. So our retreat is about having good themes that bring that into focus.
And you certainly had some really heavy hitters come through there. And, you know, in addition to Mary Morrissey, Jean Houston, you know, Howard Caesar, there's just been people who are known beyond New Thought, but also known beyond or across religious lines, as well as thought leaders from, you know, a worldwide recognition. I had some wonderful experiences there. When I went in, I was a little uncomfortable because there was only one other Black person there, and I only saw them when I was the skiing grounds. And so I was a little uncomfortable. I was surprised. And now I look up today and you have two Black female board members on the Big Sky team. So tell me about what shifted in the last few years.
Yeah, a great deal has shifted, because being on the board as long as I have, and one of the things that I consistently said is that if we stay white bread, then that's the beginning of the end of this retreat, meaning that if we are not open to see greater diversity in attendees and reaching out to have the kind of programming and speakers that bring that for us, to nurture that intention for us. So I have definitely been working for a very significant time for that purpose. And we had major changes on our board that brought it down to a smaller board, but that in the past, there were, and this is true of many centers and churches, and particularly larger ones, we had for many years a 9-member board. And out of that, there were like 3, maybe 4, that were the workers that did everything in regards to the retreat. And that ended a few years ago. And when that did, that's when I said, you know, we're zeroing in on what we need to do here. And the two new members that we have, Reverend Kim Andrews and Lisa Altman Baldwin, they are magnificent. They're in marketing. They're helping us. We're seeing a retreat that is going to be reflecting, finally, a greater sense of intention and inclusiveness on a much broader scale than it ever has been known for.
Great. Now, before we start moving a little bit further into Mind Your Own Becoming, I just want people to know that there's still time for them to register for this year's Big Sky Retreat. What are those dates in September, and how do people register for that?
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. It's really simple. BigSkyRetreat.com is the website. BigSkyRetreat.com. Go directly there. You will see on the front page the registration, and you can click on registration, and it will go through and tell you exactly the early registration, on which you'll save about $50 if you registered before July 15th, is there. You can also go for a week, the weekend, meaning from Saturday, it starts September 2nd to the 7th. And September 2nd at 3 p.m. on a Saturday, it ends that following Thursday morning. And but we do have a weekend rate that you can come Saturday and go through the Monday night programming. and get a great deal of content in those 2.5 days and leave on Tuesday. So it's an easy do. BigSkyRetreat.com. Front page, you'll see registration. And your registration is one thing. You're registering for the hotel is another. And that's also on there to tell you exactly how to do that.
Okay. And then you have Jafon Seely as one of the presenters.
Yeah, Jafon Seely and Savannah. Oh my God, her last name.
Ryder, is it?
Yes. Yes. And Ryder. And,
okay.
And we have Gary Lynn Floyd as our music director. And, you know, this is also reflecting a younger generation coming on board. And we're excited about that because not only in a diversity of crowd racial view, but also in the generational view, we're seeing changes happening. So it's beautiful.
I noticed that, and I figured that that was intentional. Let's talk about where your heart is, and that's in the mind your own becoming space. What prompted you? Generally, when somebody does something that drastic, something happened to open your eyes in some way. What happened that made you be so passionate about doing this work, and how are you moving through it? Is it an easy ride, or what is it?
The intention and the passion came from, again, the observance of what was occurring through 2020 and COVID and the incredible, but there's no other word for me, insanity and divisiveness that has come to play in everything in regards to our country, and that we can't have the kind of dialogue anymore that brings us to a sense of an openness to even listen to one another. But on the whole context of, I do have interracial family in my family. My niece married a Black man and she has 3 children, two daughters. I mean, 1 daughter and 2 sons. And I also was a part of their growth early on because she wound up divorcing him and I stepped in and for a few years was there for them. And I saw firsthand what they have moved through. And then George Floyd and the beyond defining that murder, but that was seeing it in front of us. And that was going on for hundreds of years. And all of everything yes. that we needed to wake up to, and me, white, wake up to. I was so passionate in the early, when I first was able to vote, it was Kennedy was becoming the president at that time. But my journey swept me into the need to be there for my family. So I never got involved in that way. But I wanted to now be and have my 80s be about doing what I feel a thimbleful of difference in a handful of people. But I want that handful to grow to many more. But all that matters is if I can be some part of someone having a broader scope and perspective, and that we can recognize the entitlement and the sense of privilege that we've carried being white, that we can own it and see it, and not from condemnation, but observance and compassionate realization. Wow. Because so much of it is unconscious. Much of it is conscious, but so much of it isn't. And so has this been easy? No. This has been the hardest thing I've ever had to do in regards to how do I do it? And I'm still in that journey and will be until I complete and am called home to eternity. But we are doing many things now that just as we, to broaden the Big Sky Retreat, we're also looking to broaden the scope of MYOB to like the indigenous natives here in Montana. That's a profound reality that's right in front of us all the time. and the LGBTQ plus community. Oh my God. And much more of that, and the trans community. So much to address, but I have to just go back to, I'm going to do the best I can, continuing to grow, learn about myself in the process, and draw people that ultimately will expand the vision that's in my heart, because I want it to last far beyond me. It's not about me. It's about us. And there are more groups doing this type of thing all over. So it's not like MYLB is unique. But one of the key things is that I ask people to do the inner soul work on themselves in order to come to a greater potential of how they can make a difference in their own communities. And, you know, the five principles that I teach are really about that, and for people to come to awareness of what that means in their lives.
So you have biracial nephews, is that right?
Yes, I do.
And a biracial niece.
Yeah, two nephews and a niece, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so these three people that you care about, what have you seen in their lives prior to anything that even happened with George Floyd? What have you noticed about their lives that might have been different than your experience growing up?
Oh, completely different because of the fact that they are brown, black. They are targeted, and that's without issue. And that the law enforcement, most definitely, that the odds of them being pulled over are so infinitely more than white, and purposefully pulled over without cause, seeing that. And just the sense of their own coming to terms and valuing who they are supremely for who they are and the beauty that they are. And, you know, all of us have something sacred and magnificent in us. You know, with me, I tried to walk very carefully about my sexuality because I did feel that the judgment and everything about it was real, that it was something true and real. And in fact, it was, because I had the experience of being attacked and left the street and being beaten. I mean, seriously. So I know what it is. And in the meantime, so loved my nephews and niece and wanted them to know how profoundly I love them for just the magnificence and beauty of who they are, and walk with that, have pride in that, of who they are. I now have pride in who I am as Charles.
Good. So those of us who walk in brown and black skins, and, you know, we're all somehow mixed in because people took advantage of us. And just like, you know, I have indigenous roots as well. My great-grandmother is, you know, half Blackfoot. And so what I know is that, you know, certain peoples of color come together kind of as a bonding for survival. What have you come to understand since this George Floyd incident was such an eye-opener for white people that we already knew about? What was it that was different for you?
The brutality and the horror of seeing it in such a manner and way that there was no escaping it or thinking about it in any other way than you were witnessing a murder. And then the historical context of that, we get so caught in our own journeys and what we don't know in regards particularly to race, black, brown, and the magnitude of understanding how you feel and being able to have the vulnerability to listen and the willingness to acknowledge our ignorance and in the meantime to open to a greater sense of awareness, because the future generations have to be aware of everything that's going on in regards to so many of the politicians in Florida to literally block education and truth historically is a crime. It is a horror. And, you know, everything that's occurring, again, in the broadest scope in regards to LGBTQ plus and transgender, and blocking the progress that has been made going back decades and decades to ignorance again. You know, this is so all I can say is that, oh my God, there's so much to address. And at the same time, and Celeste saying this with all my soul, this is the first time in my life being here in Clancy, Montana, up in the mountains, in such sacred ground for me, that I haven't had to feel that I've had to work 6 days a week, sometimes more, and be driven in everything that I was doing and always taking care of congregation and family. This is the first time I've been able to say, wow, you know what? I can MYOB. I can genuinely mind my own becoming in a way that I never knew before. And I don't want to lose that. With all the energy and love that I have for what I'm doing, it's also, oh my God, you know, I love quiet. I love to meditate. I love to walk in the wonder of the personal wonder of beholding the beauty I see and the animals that are around me, and knowing that God has given me this time, a slice of heaven, and I'm so grateful for it. And at the same time, I want to do something good and meaningful, and that's why I'm doing MYOB.
Now, this is the central question for Mystic Magic that I ask every guest, and that is, can you think of a mystical moment that changed your life?
Yes. For many years when I was in Los Angeles, and for about 7 or 8 years in the magnitude of AIDS, I had a group called Together to Grow. And I love that group. And it was the first time that I had actually been integrally involved in the gay community personally, in all honesty. And I was, of course, still with Big Sky Retreat. Well, back then, the Grand Teton Retreat. And I wanted a group of my board and members of Together to Grow to come to this retreat. But I had no concept of how it could happen, what I could do. And 1 year after the retreat, I was sitting by the Snake River. And I was in prayer. And I was calling on my angels and asking them, please, I want some of my members to be able to come and experience this. And in that moment, I couldn't see. There was a blinding golden light, and everything around me was golden. And the energy was so incredible. And all I knew, I was getting imprint from that angelic energy saying, Charles, we know how to bring them there. Will you just trust that you will see them there? And for 2 years in a row, a group of seven or so came. And another mystical moment, very quick. We were all together, about seven of us, in a van driving through Yellowstone. And one of the founding members, his name was David. We were all laughing hysterically because we were just having such fun and the beauty around us. And suddenly David broke down. And he started to cry. And he was just overwhelmed. And it was like, oh my God, what's wrong? And all he said, this is so beautiful. This is so beautiful. That was a mystic moment too, that from that river, they came and they were able to see it. That's mystic moments for me.
And what was different about you after that?
Oh, completely realizing how profoundly I loved. How profoundly I love, period. If that's the only true thing in my life, love. Love ultimately wins, no matter what we have to go through. And that everyone, I still pray, because when the group collapsed and I had to let it go, I was in such devastating sorrow. And I couldn't understand why so many younger were being called. And I was still here. And I finally realized I'm here because of their love. I'm still loving because of them, all of the angels that I worked with in all those years. I'm here because of them, and MYO being still in a way to just be loving. That's for all of us.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Charles. And thank you for coming to Mystic Magic. You are such a wonderfully open, loving being, and I'm glad that our audience is experiencing you, and I know that because you are so loving that you will continue to widen the roads for more people to know the depth and the breadth of love as you do. So thank you so much for all that you do.
God bless. So profoundly grateful, and to you, thank you.
Yes, this is Mystic Magic. Exploring our spirit to understand our lives.
Thank you for tuning in today. Be sure to check out our show notes for more information about today's episode. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and all of your favorite podcast venues. This is Mystic Magic, exploring our spirit to understand our lives.